Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog. I hope you're tuning in to listen to enlightening, educational, and informative conversations about life with service dogs and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Thank you for tuning in to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. And welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai. With us today, Greg Leskoski, Denny Brown, and founder, CEO, and certified master dog trainer, Mary Peter, are with us from Canine Partners for Patriots Incorporated. Folks, how is everybody doing today?
Very well.
Doing great. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. Of interest to me, and I think to our audience, is, well, twofold. First of all, you are what I have termed a cooperative training organization. And for the audience who doesn't understand, what that means is that the disabled veteran is responsible for the day-in, day-out upkeep and home training of their service dog. And they bring their dog to classes there at your facility where you marry the trainer. Are able to interact with them, and that's this great. creates the bond. So, what can you share with me about your program?
Well, it's twofold. It's to give veterans a safe place to come, a family environment, and family support, and then the training skills to be able to handle going out in public. Life skills are taught, how to answer questions in the public, know the laws, and to train their own service dog to give them a purpose. That was one of the biggest things we saw was veterans telling me they had no purpose anymore. By training their own dog, it gives them something else to concentrate on besides their PTSD. Mm-hmm. It gives them a job they have to do every day. They have to train the dog every day, several times a day. The camaraderie they get here as well helps them learn to forge new friendships, socialize. So it's multifaceted, really.
And Denny, you are the licensed clinical social worker there at Canine Partners for Patriots, which is, I think, a unique to your program or fairly unique to have a mental health expert on staff. How do you fit into this melange of recovery and training?
Well, I administer the test, the study we've been doing for, 2.5 years now. Mm-hmm. We have support groups on a regular basis here. We have a spouse group. We have a female veteran group. We have a veteran group, a co-ed. We do one-on-one counseling on an as-needed basis. Case management services. Basically, it kind of runs the gamut of whatever that particular veteran might need given given that particular day. Mm-hmm. As Mary said, a lot of these men and women, unfortunately, haven't been out of the house much in the past, 3 years, and this is kind of their first kind of attempt back out in society again, and we give them that safe environment to kind of rebuild those connections, and whether it's our aftercare program or training classes that go on for 19 weeks. Mm-hmm. But it's just amazing to see the changes that occur when these veterans come in. And then when they kind of graduate, and they're always encouraged to come back. They're never, as Mary will tell you, they're part of the family. They when they graduate, they're not like showing the door and saying, have a good life.
Right.
They're always encouraged to come back. They're always part of this group. We have veterans that come. I mean, we have several today that just come in and sit on class and have coffee and, mm-hmm. get out of the house.
We also have, social events that Denny's here for those as well, to encourage the veterans to get out of their comfort zone. Every quarter, we invite all our veterans, their families. We cater an event. We just had over 200 here with all service dogs for Christmas. We had a big Christmas party, and in 3 months we'll probably have a barbecue. And we encourage the families to get involved, because PTSD can, as you well know, can separate the veteran from that family emotionally.
Yeah.
And we want them to learn to have those emotions again, to meet new friends. And so it's all veteran friendly here, but we do want to keep them in a socialized scenario. And Denny's here in case some have a hard time with that. The classes start out with only 10 at a time, so they're not overwhelmed, but we gradually introduce them into larger and larger situations.
Yeah, as you can imagine, 200 people in a crowded room with dogs can be quite overwhelming for many many people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Greg, I feel like we're leaving you out. You're the communications director there for Canine Partners for Patriots Incorporated. Thank you for joining us and for helping to reach this. Let me ask you and let you get started. Denny touched on it briefly. There's a study, and I'm excited about this study for many reasons. What can you tell me about it?
Well, what it's confirming is that canine therapy with veterans with PTSD is quite effective. And it's in fact, for many of our veterans, I would say for all of our veterans, it's far more effective than many of the pharmaceuticals that the Veterans Administration feels is the preferred therapy. You know, they've had a one-dimensional approach for decades. And frankly, that's indefensible now when you look at the data that has been produced by Purdue University and by St. Leo University. St. Leo has data based on our veterans and their performance at Canine Partners for Patriots. So the effectiveness of this program is just extraordinary. And we hear it from all of our veterans. The quality of life that they have is so much more positive, so much more beneficial for them now than before they began the program. If I didn't see it with my own eyes, I'd have been skeptical myself.
And, you know, it's one thing to see it on test results, but to see it in real life, you know, I think that's it's wonderful. I mean, it kind of confirms everything that we're seeing in the data. So,
and adding to that as well, the St. Leo doing our independent study, empirical data, have been so impressed. Their professors, their doctors there have said they have never seen anything in all their years of counseling and this type of thing. They have, every one of our veterans improved in every single category in a 5-month period, and many are off their medications now.
Well, and I think that's a key point. And we talked a little bit about this during the warm up while we were getting ready to start recording. And I like Greg, what you said about the one dimensional approach that the VA seems to be taking. They throw drugs at the veterans first using what I like to call the spaghetti method. Throw every pill they can think of at you and see what sticks. And that leads to, well, that has a side effect, so we need to give them that medication. And it builds up and it builds up, and pretty soon you've got veterans taking 30, 40, 50 pills a day and not having any improvement in quality of life. I think a key factor to what your program does, I'm pretty amazed. I mean, I've read your website, I've looked at everything, but hearing you guys talk about, look, this is what we do. This is when you come here. This is how we approach it. It's a holistic approach. You're not looking at the veteran and saying, okay, PTSD, these are the medications that work. You're looking at the veteran and saying, we need to help you reintegrate into life. And you're approaching all those little aspects, and the tool that you're using is the service dog, and more specifically the process of training the service dog. And I think, and this is my personal opinion, but it's also my personal experience, the process of training my dog, of dragging through my head and figuring out, well, what's going on? Why is he reacting that way? And how can I use that to assist me so that I don't react that way in the future? That process is where the healing is drawn. What can you guys bring to the table in that discussion?
Like a, biofeedback. In other words, the dog's picking up on something, I'm reacting. What am I, why am I acting this way? Then you kind of have to take a look at yourself. You know, why am I anxious? Why am I this? So the dog helps you, you know, realize that something's going on. The dog also helps you, I think, you know, you have to take the dog out. You have to, so it gets you out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mary can speak to this. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you have to get them out. You have to go for a walk, yeah. You meet people along the way, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the other thing we do teach them is how to recognize when the dog is actually working for them, because, you know, when you're in that state of mind and the dog is bumping you or trying to get your focus, a lot of times the veteran pushes the dog away.
Yeah,
get off me. I don't, you know, because it's one more annoyance that mm-hmm. they're trying to have to deal with in the situation that they're feeling at that time. So we do have to teach them when your dog is persistent, when your dog is not stopping, you don't push your dog away. Stop and check yourself.
Yeah.
Check your pulse. Check your, you know, are you producing adrenaline? Are you sweating? Are you, is your heart rate up? Because the chances are what your dog is doing is not to irritate you. Your dog is trying to redirect your focus and help you out of what you're in. So mm-hmm. that's been a learning process for them. And they will come to me and go, oh, you know what I did? And you know, my dog tried to help me and I kept pushing it away. And then fortunately, because we hammer this into them, I remember what you said and I stopped and I checked myself and I realized, this was off or that was off. I let my dog work and then my dog stopped bothering me and he was calmer. And so we do try to teach them to pay more attention to their dog's body language and to theirs. So
the dog's going to pick up on it a lot faster than you can even realize it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And that when you work with the dog together and you have to observe yourself, you have to be introspective when you're training your service dog. Then you start to pick up on it on your own. I've noticed,
yeah.
I was explaining, Skeeter's 8 years old. I've been working with him in public for 6 years. We trained for two. Skeeter tells me ahead of time, look, hey, this is going to bother you. We probably want to not go do that. You know, mm-hmm. shopping and an aisle is packed. Skeeter won't let me go down the aisle. Not because he's afraid, but because he knows if I do go down the aisle with 13 people in it, I'm going to start pinging. And mm-hmm. he's learned and I've learned, and it's a teamwork. It's, you know, it goes up and down the leash. It's teamwork.
Absolutely.
We have learned together that when he says, hey, Dad, we don't want to do that, I listen. Now, there are occasions where I have to pull through. I've got to get that package of peanuts or, you know, it's for a recipe. I have to. But we find ways to work around it. And so, you know, it's a hard concept to explain unless you have a handler and their dog right in front of you who can show you.
Yeah, that's
really, that feedback is really hard to break down and explain in a lot of ways.
It's very difficult when we go out and people ask me to give a demo. And I said, you can't really give a demo for a PTSD dog or a TBI dog. I said, unless somebody is having a panic attack, unless there's a flashback, you know, a nightmare, those type of things, these dogs are very well-trained obedience, and we can show you that, but you can't show them the job the dog does. It happens when it has to happen, and it's not something you can set up.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
We don't want to set that up. You know?
No. Yeah. Oh, sure, let me go make my veterans freak out for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We have enough trouble keeping them unfreaked, if you know what I mean.
Hey, been there, done that, have the T-shirt.
Okay.
How long did it take you before you started listening to your dog?
That's a funny story. I've shared this on the show before. I was living in Pueblo, Colorado at the time, and we had a very severe methamphetamine problem in Pueblo. And Skeeter picked up on, I don't like tweakers at all. When they're spun up, something sets me off and I go straight into fight or flight mode. And we went into Walmart, and he's been working with me in public for about 4 months now. I mean, like I said, we trained for about 2 years before I felt comfortable taking him out. So we walk into the Walmart and I start going down an aisle, and there's a tweaker there. And I mean, he's visibly, his body is vibrating. He is a tweaker. And I started spinning up, and I was that rage hit. I was ready to panic or attack. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know which way was up. I started hearing things. I mean, it just went sideways really fast. And Skeeter turned around, and I trained him three stages. He sits on my foot. That's level one. When a 100-pound Malamute sits on your foot, you have one choice. Drop your hand and start petting him, which calms you down. You know, it's been empirically proven that petting the dog releases oxytocin and reduces your dopamine and adrenaline levels and calms you. Right. Well, his second stage that I trained him to do is start pushing me away from what's stressing me, what's setting me off. Well, he'd already sat on my foot and that didn't do anything. He started pushing me away and that didn't do anything. And this was all on his own. He turned around and faced me, reared up, put his paws on my shoulders, knocked me flat on my back, and laid on me and held me down while I calmed down. He would not let me up until I was calm enough to get up and leave. And it took about 10 minutes of you know, six foot three man laying on the floor in the middle of Walmart with a 100-pound Malamute laying smack on him. And that the lesson I learned that day is trust your dog. If the dog says, hey, that's getting you better listen. And he didn't do anything wrong. I wasn't listening to what I trained him to do. So he escalated the best way he knew how. Hey, I'm big enough to knock Dad over, you know?
What did they do in Walmart?
Actually, there was no, the tweaker had gone. Nobody even said it, nothing. It was like I didn't exist. I'm laying in the middle of the floor with the dog laying on me and they just completely ignored me. I don't know if it just happened out of camera view and nobody noticed. And honestly, the only thing I really remember is Tweaker, me freak out, Skeeter say no. I don't remember going in. I don't really remember coming out. I remember the incident. And then when I got home telling my wife, you will not believe what Skeeter did today. And it took me a couple weeks to really process it and come to the realization that he knew what he was doing. It was me that was the problem.
Usually that's the way it works.
I'm so interested in this study. You're using the trauma symptom inventory 2 to measure responses, Denny. Tell me a little bit, just in case. I'm sure every single one of those veterans that are listening to the show and who've gone through the VA have taken this little evaluation tool. We've done it, but for the audience, tell us about this tool and what it's designed to measure.
It's a 136 questions. It's a Likert scale, which means basically, you know, 0 through 3, where do you kind of fall in this ranking? It measures basically most of the trauma symptoms you can imagine. I mean, it gets pretty in depth. Very invasive. It's a very difficult test, unfortunately, you know, for many of our veterans to take. And they take it when they first come in, so they're already a bit nervous anyways. But once they get through that, I mean, the post-test have, as Mary said, has shown reductions in, you know, depression, suicidal ideation, more sociability, more kind of, you know, fewer nightmares. So we have seen, the results of what the program does.
Okay. And when you administer tests, you administer it when they come in, are you administering it midway and then at the end or just beginning and end?
When they first come in, we kind of, the first day is basically, there's not much training involved. It basically mostly involves the test, and then they give out gear, to get them prepared, kind of go over some basics. But the test, I let them take as much time as they need, because like I said, sometimes it can be very difficult for some of our veterans who come in, prepare them ahead of time. We let them know, you know, during their interview, they're told that this is what's going to happen. This is the test, you know, to kind of prepare them for it, but it's, still can be rather difficult.
Yeah. Pre and post. So the day they graduate, they take it again. We promised them it's 138 questions. We promised them that we would not make them take it more than the two times.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and that's not unreasonable. I'm just curious about the process, since we're talking about providing empirical evidence. So, you know, I just, I'm curious. Okay. So you hand them a pamphlet of test questions or
go over the guidelines, go over the, you know, ask them, you know, if they have any questions, they're more than welcome to reach out to me, but it's, basically it's self-administered. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's cool. That's cool. And then the university takes this data and then compares it before and after to the program.
Yes.
Okay.
We've had another actually, University of Central Florida did a small pilot study as well, separate from the St. Leo one. And, mm-hmm. and they showed very, you know, I think the result, they don't go into as in-depth as the trauma TSI-2, but it showed positive results in that study as well.
That study was to test the difference of those that have been accepted in a program yet waiting for a dog to be trained for them,
mm-hmm.
as opposed mm-hmm. to those that come to us. We have no waiting list.
Right.
You know, many places have a year, 2 year, 3 year waiting list. We don't, the day they come for an interview and background check is done, if everything's approved, they're hugged and welcomed into the family. And then we get them started, even if we don't have a dog for them yet, we get them started in here so they're meeting other veterans and they've got an immediate family to connect to here
mm-hmm.
while we're getting their appropriate dog. So that study was to see the difference between those that are waiting for a dog in our program but are involved in the program and already in here on a regular basis, as opposed to those that have been approved for some program and are waiting for a dog somewhere. And of course, ours was much higher because we had them already involved in a family environment here with other veterans. And we don't let them, we make it mandatory before we even get you a dog. You have to start coming here. You have to start getting integrated into some little bit of social environment and let you watch what we do so there's a comfort level for you there as well. So we had real high results with that.
I think that's fantastic. And again, that goes back to that holistic approach. You're not just looking at veteran, dog, train, go. You're approaching
exactly.
the veteran and the dog, the team as a whole. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. I mean, this is how all of the training organizations should be doing it for PTSD service dogs for veterans, quite frankly. This is brilliant. I'm excited to see a program like this. I'd like to see other places picking this up, you know.
Well, we are doing that actually, Joaquin. We are mentoring now other organizations. I had been asked to make this larger, and mm-hmm. I don't want to do that because I don't want to lose the family environment, and that's why the veterans come here and they're comfortable here. I don't want to be another Wounded Warriors program or some big organization, but I still want to help veterans throughout the United States. So we have had other organizations contact us, one in Wisconsin, Wausau, Wisconsin, that is a training center, and they wanted to help veterans. So we paid for them to come here. We taught them everything for free, and they started their veteran program on our syllabus and our trained the way I trained. And they've already graduated about 40 veterans now. We have people coming from Montana next week to meet with us to help mentor them to start this program at their organization and possibly one in Colorado. So we're open to helping any organization in the United States that wants to learn how to do this.
That is
no cost.
That is absolutely fantastic. That's exciting. Yeah, that's so cool. We're going to take a quick break for station identification. You are listening to the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR. We'll be right back.
DV Radio.
The number of homeless veterans is on the rise, and in 2017, the number ticked up for the first time in 7 years to 40,000.
Many of these homeless vets live in areas affected by extreme winters, with sub-freezing temperatures and feet of snow.
DEV is launching our biggest project to date. This winter, we hope to hand out 1,000 winter survival bags to homeless vets across the country. We need your help to make this happen.
You can pledge as little as a quarter of a bag, or up to as many bags as you'd like at mydvstore.com.
DV6, a former homeless veteran and founder of Dysfunctional Veterans and DV Farm, will travel with a team to several cities across the country to give bags to homeless veterans.
But we need your support to pull together and make this happen by simply going to mydvstore.com. Once again, if you'd like to donate, please visit www.mydvstore.com.
Ever shop online at smile.amazon.com? Why not give back to the DV Farm by making it your charity of choice? No extra fees or hidden costs, and a portion of your purchase goes directly towards the DV Farm, located in Gilsum, New Hampshire, and helping to continue its mission. That's smile.amazon.com, and be sure DV Farm is your charity of choice. For more information about the DV Farm, please go to dvfarm.org. Nothing interesting on TV? That's why you're listening to DVRadio.net WDVR.
This ain't reality TV!
It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal!
It was at this moment that he knew he fucked up.
Oh, rude! Well, isn't that special?
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
Mama said that.
Good day, sir!
Now class is dismissed, gentlemen.
Welcome back to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai. We are here again with Canine Partners for Patriots. We're talking to the CEO, founder, certified master dog trainer, and all-around great person, Mary Peter, Denny Brown, the licensed clinical social worker with the program, and Greg Laskowski. Greg, I hope I'm not butchering your last name.
Oh, you're doing fine.
Okay.
We all do that. It's okay.
And we were talking about, before the break, we were talking about the fact that you're reaching out and you're helping other organizations learn how to do it your way, the way you're doing it. And Greg brought up a really good point. So the question is, I want you to fill us in a little bit more. I'm a veteran coming in off the street. I need help. And finally, you know, the VA's just throwing pills at me. It's not working. Counseling helps, but it's not a solution, and it's hard, and I still can't go shop for myself and get groceries. I still can't manage that. I need help, and I walk in the door. Mary, walk me through the process.
Okay. The first thing we try to tell everyone, so that, you know, we don't want anyone to have the feeling of rejection, and we know how hard that is. So we do tell them to go to our website and apply online. It gives them all the criteria, what our requirements are. We do require an honorable discharge, the DD-214, no felonies, and that their diagnosis is service related. We don't care if it's service connected. They don't have to be getting compensated for it, but just that the TBI, MST, or PTSD is a service related diagnosis. So once they do that, they fill out the application and just hit submit. It comes right to our veteran liaison, who calls. He'll send them a letter right away, and usually we get them in for an interview within 2 or 3 days, sometimes a week. And so it's when they come in the door then, because we don't want them to come in the door and then find they didn't qualify, and then we have to turn them away. And I don't want to ever hurt them like that. So that's why we want them to do their due diligence beforehand and make sure they do qualify and meet the criteria.
And let me step in there real quick and interject. This does require, starting with a service dog, training a service dog, you have to step out of your comfort zone. You've got to stop isolating yourself. You have to reach out.
Absolutely. And I tell them the biggest step they ever took was walking through our doors. Mm-hmm. And over both our entrances, we have an 11,000 square foot training center and rubber floors, so the veterans are safe in case anybody falls or, you know, for the dogs as well. But when you come from our office into the training center itself, over both doors, there's a sign that says, through these doors lies hope and healing. And that's what we want them to take away from when they come here. There's hope here and there is healing here. We've seen it. So we do an interview, and our veteran liaison, who started as a veteran in this program and graduated from this program, is now veteran liaison and doing the interviews, because who better than one that's been here, done that?
Yep.
And he makes it light. He's excellent with the interviews, puts everybody comfortable. If we have a female, especially if it's an MST case, then one of us women will sit in there with the interview if they would prefer that. But it's all out in it's in an open scenario, so we can, you know, they're not in a room, closed in a room.
Right.
So once the interview is done and we run the background check, but while we're doing that, then we sit with the veteran. If they come with a dog, if they already have a dog, the first thing we ask them is, does the dog meet your needs? Does the dog wake you up from nightmares? Does it stop your flashbacks? Does it stop your anxiety? Does it redirect your focus? If they're telling me yes, then I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I don't want to take their dog away from them or tell them they can't use their dog. If the dog is already working, then let me temperament test it. And if it's the right dog, it's social and it's good in a social environment, then we'll put them into that training with their own dog.
Fantastic.
A lot of places do not do that. We have from Chihuahuas all the way up to St. Bernards and Great Danes in our program. So, you know, we don't care about the breed of the dog so much as we care about the temperament and the nose of the dog. And I'll explain that. But anyway, then once the interview is finished with the administrative side, then the trainers, myself or Jeannie, who does our canine acquisitions, will sit with the vet, and that's where we find out, what do you need? What, you know, we have an application, but tell us about you. Tell me what your difficulties are. What would help you the most? What's your family environment like? Do you have children? Do you know, all these things that play into making sure that we get the right dog. And we've rescued over 112 dogs so far, to give to vets that needed dogs. But we have to make sure that when we rescue a dog, we, especially if they have very young children, we don't want to take a dog from a rescue that we know nothing about to put in a home with a small child.
Absolutely.
So there, you know, some have allergies, so we have to find a hypoallergenic dog. There are a lot of things to consider. So, you know, the first thing we do is see what they're comfortable with and make sure that if they're married, the spouse is on board too, because it has to be a whole family thing. It can't be one hating that you're getting a dog and the other one needing a dog. It has to be a joint thing. Mm-hmm. And usually the spouse, if they're supportive, the spouse will be here with them. But once we determine what they need, then the hunt goes for the right dog. And when we test our dogs, there is not anybody that I know of that does it the way we do it. And I've been told, we are founding members of an association for service dog providers for military veterans, which is, a DC, based organization. And I was a guest speaker there in DC at the conference this year or last year. And when I explained what we do and how we do, all the service organizations that were there had never heard of this. We want a dog. We don't want to give a veteran a pet. We want to give them a dog that they're going to love and be part of the family, but a dog that's going to be the medical equipment that they need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So we test the dog to scent adrenaline. Mm-hmm. If a dog cannot scent adrenaline, I don't care how sweet it is, it's not going to work. So we do put our veterans in here on the floor. We'll put staff in between. We walk dogs. We never force a dog up to anybody. We walk the dog by and we look for that dog that head snaps, smells the adrenaline, because most of them are pretty nervous. And right. That dog will use its nose and go straight to the veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Then we know we've got a dog that's got that, the ability to scent it, and we'll be able to help the dog the person medically through the nightmares and flashbacks and the panic attacks and those type of things. Because of our process, it's very difficult, because only 1 out of 25 to 1 out of 50 dogs pass our test.
Well, and I think that's something important to realize is there are organizations out there that have breeding programs, and they're maybe getting 1 out of 40 puppies that's suitable.
Exactly.
And
I don't know how they.
Yeah, and we're not going to get into that discussion, but you know, they're charging $25,000 per dog is what they're claiming. They're breeding one in every 40 dogs is suitable to go to training. But then how many of those out of every 40 actually succeeds and completes the training? You see the ball rolling rapid. Yes, absolutely.
That's why our cost is lower than just about any other organization. We don't house dogs. We don't have kennels. We don't have, and I did that for a purpose because I wanted to keep, obviously the veterans pay nothing, but, to keep our costs low and to save two lives. Let's save a dog and let's save a veteran.
Yep.
And the two of them, the veteran feels a special bond when they know that they're saving a dog that was on euthanasia for the next day. They feel like their life is being saved, and the bond that's created is incredible.
Let's talk about the bond, because it all falls back to the bond. Obviously, the medical response to the change in adrenaline, that's absolutely vital. But the bond, yes, the dog has the ability, but then that bond is in my mind the absolute most important thing for a PTSD service dog. If you are not joined at the hip with your dog, you're not going to succeed as a PTSD team.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts there?
Well, it's twofold. The bond is crucial. It's your partner. It's somebody that's got your back. But what I try to tell my veterans is the dog is a bridge for you. The dog is not a crutch. I hate when people say that your dog is a crutch. It's not. It's a bridge.
Absolutely.
You're in isolation. This dog is a bridge to get you out of where you are, to help you cross over to where you want to go.
It's so funny. We use some of the same terminology. This is in my book.
Good. I'll have to read it when I get it. The other thing, though, I have to caution them about is the dog is a tool. And their lifespan is not as long as ours.
Mm-hmm.
And when you wrap everything in your life around your dog, it's not a good thing to do. We just had two veterans this past week lost their service dogs in our program. Mm-hmm. And one veteran ended up back in the hospital because of it. Both of them are coming back to us. So we're going to, these were both their own personal dogs, and we're going to help them get a dog and start all over again. But there has to be a balance. There has to be, the dog is probably 75% of the help that the veteran is looking for, in my opinion, that we see. But they need to have that outside resource. They need to have that, like Denny is here for the counseling, and we're here as their family. They know they can call us anytime and we'll help them get through this. But you can't be a statistic because your dog was.
It's really funny. I was telling you a little bit about the show that's going to air prior to this episode. It was with a Vietnam era veteran, and our subject was service dog mortality. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that it's coming up again. And Skeeter turns 8 here in 2 days from the day we're recording this. So his mortality is very much at the forefront of my mind. And I couldn't agree with you more. You've got to understand that whether you're going to need another service dog or not, I know that I will. Their lives are shorter than ours. And we have to understand that and accept it and plan for it if we're going to survive the loss of that dog in a healthy manner. And it's so important to be very realistic with each other. And we don't talk about mortality of our dogs in the service dog community at large enough. We don't do it. Because it is hard.
We don't want to.
Yeah.
It's an evasion. Keeps you from hurting. When I explained that to my veteran class yesterday, I tried to tell them my goal for them is not to need their service dog. My goal is for them to be able to start going places without it, and the dog becomes their pet. Will they ever get there? Maybe not. And that's okay. I have some that I'm proud to say have gone on and were able to get jobs. The dogs got them out of isolation. We trained, they did well. And 2 years later, they said, I'm doing good. I want my dog to help another vet. That's a sacrifice right there. Yeah. They gave that dog back so it could help another veteran because they've reclaimed their life again.
Absolutely. And that's really should be the goal, is healing.
Right. And everybody heals differently at different times in different ways. So you can't cookie cutter say, you know, I had a woman whose dog I trained MST, and 14 years, dog died 14 years later, you know, after 14 years, and she came back and said, I need another dog. Okay, fine. We trained another dog.
Yeah,
I have others that don't need their dog anymore or just need them occasionally. That mm-hmm. whatever works for them, that's all I care about.
I absolutely agree. I know we're getting close to the time we need to end. Denny, you've got to head out to a counseling session. Have you got anything to add about the program, the test, anything you'd like to interject?
You know, what I see here, I've seen it since I started a couple of years ago, is these men and women come in here and they're kind of lost. But Mary has provided an environment that is, you know, there's no judgment here. We're big on hugging here, which is probably a lot of places aren't, you know, kind of a no-no, but it instills that family environment. You know, we're not, you know, obviously they're not their family. You know, we go home and we have our lives, but we do our best. We, you know, sometimes we fail, but we do our best to create an environment that puts them at ease. From the moment they walk in the door for their interview, from the moment they come and observe a class, you know, we have volunteers here that are over there sitting with them. You know, we get to know their spouses. We get to know their, you know, what's going on in their daily lives. And you know, some of these men and women, like I said, they've been coming back here for a couple of years, multiple years. And it's mm-hmm. just, it's a beautiful thing to see. I think that's such a big part of it is finding that connection again. You know, when you're sitting at home isolated and, you know, the lights are off and, you know, you're looking through the blinds and every noise startles you and here there's a safe environment. And like I said, that no judgment is such a big thing, because I'm sure as you've probably gone through is, you know, no one else understands what I'm going through. And if I tell them half the stuff that I'm thinking, then people are going to think I'm crazy. I'm thinking I'm this. You know, here it doesn't matter. Everyone's here kind of gone through the same thing. So
we're all crazy.
We're a dysfunctional family, as we like to say.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Denny. I know you need to break loose. I've got two more questions, one for Mary and one for Greg. Mary, I wanted to touch real briefly. We were talking about it a little before we began recording this show. You go through ADA challenge lessons. You teach your handlers how to deal with access challenges. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, and actually we just did that today in our training center. We have three scenario rooms. We have a small pet store, we have a small cafe, and we have a small doctor's office. And in those scenarios, each week we go through, you know, they roll their eyes at me because it's muscle, you know, I want muscle memory. Is it a service dog? What task is it trained to perform for you? Here's your answers. Here's what you do. But we put them in the cafe. We put the dogs under the table. We pretend to be the restaurant owner that doesn't know service laws and panic and saying, you have to leave. I'm going to lose my license. The health department's going to close me down. You have to get out. Well, how do you respond to that? How do you answer that question? We teach them how to do that. If a waitress has an allergy and says, you'll have to move, I can't serve you. Well, that's not true. I'm sorry you have an allergy, but my dog is my medical equipment, and by ADA law, my dog is allowed to be here with me. Could you get me another waitress? Teaching them that they have rights, but to know what your rights are. We do all sorts of scenarios and teaching them to know so they don't panic when they're confronted. We teach them when people ask to pet their dog and you say no, we tell them no, but we teach them what answer to give so that they never leave a scenario or a situation without educating the public so that they don't do this to the next veteran or the next person with a service dog. So we do a lot of life skill training in addition to their service dog training.
Again, back to that holistic approach. That's fantastic. And I think that's something that is sorely lacking with a lot of these third-party training organizations where they deliver this bright, shiny, quote-unquote, fully trained service dog. They don't teach the handlers about their rights, and you get a lot of misconceptions and a lot of people who, well, my organization says, and it's the party line from the organization, not what the law actually says.
And yeah, we want them to know the laws and know it well, because
that's my bread and butter. That's
panic attack.
Yeah, that's what I do. You know, that's why I do what I do, is to try to teach my fellow veterans, service dog handlers, the law, so that they have those weapons. They're armed, and that's fantastic. My final question, and before I ask it, thank you again, Mary, for taking time out of your day. Please pass my gratitude on to Denny. I know that it's hard to coordinate three people to join on a meeting to record a show all at once. So I really appreciate you going out of your way to help put this together. My final question, Greg, is addressed to you because you are the communications director. Please give me a rundown how people can find Canine Partners for Patriots Incorporated, and where, and if they are so inclined, how they can donate.
Well, we're in Brooksville, Florida, about 40 miles north of Tampa. You can find us at www.K9partnersforpatriots.com. And certainly, anybody who is interested in making a contribution, that can be done directly through the website. So we try to make it as seamless and as easy as possible. You know, we certainly welcome anybody's inquiries, any questions anyone may have. They can certainly give us a call. Our phone number is 352-397-5306.
Well, thank you once again for joining us. You've been listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. We've been talking with Canine Partners for Patriots about their program, about the evidence-based study that they are participating in with a couple of universities in order to prove to the VA that training a service dog for PTSD is a effective method of treatment. And it's exciting. It's exciting what you folks are doing, and I'm really, really glad that you took the time to spend a little bit with me. You have been listening to this. You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you. I'm excited to hear about your program. It's really cool. You have been listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. There are other programs you can hear, including the flagship program Barracks Talk, Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here at dvradio.net. Don't forget that you can find the book, PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog, at booklocker.com, amazon.com, and barnesandnoble.com. For all of us here at DV Radio, and to those of you who have taken the time to tune in, thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.